You're listening to the OneOfUs.net Podcast Network. OneOfUs.net and all of the shows on it are 100% subscriber-supported. Please consider becoming a subscriber to OneOfUs.net, keep the site and all of our great shows going, and get some terrific bonus content as well. Got back from seeing Andy Muschietti's pitch to make a Nightmare on Elm Street film, which I'm sorry, I can't be the only one who the whole time watching this, I was like, child killer is neither really alive nor dead, affects people through sort of hallucinatory sequences based on their greatest fears, and the only way to defeat him is through the power of belief that you can defeat him.
It took you two movies to figure this out?
I mean, the movie itself calls it out.
Stephen King's Dream Warriors.
Yeah,
I mean, in the very first film, when they go to the movie theater, they're playing Nightmare on Elm Street 3 or whatever.
Yeah, and if that's not firm enough at the end of this, at one point there's a theater, it says Nightmare on Elm Street 5. I'm like, he's straight up going...
Please give me this franchise.
I can do it, guys. I can do it. Let me have it.
Believe in me.
So we are reviewing It Chapter 2. I'm Chris.
I'm Marco.
I'm Zach.
I'm Taylor.
Zach is out of order. You're out of order. This whole court is out of order. I was a big fan of It Chapter 1. I really was. And I will say that I'm one of those people, I have not read the book since whenever I read it. High school? I don't remember when it came out. I remember really liking it, but at the end going, that could have ended better, but it was a great run. You know, I had the Lost experience. I loved it up until the end, but I loved it so much. That's fine.
Are you describing It or every single Stephen King book?
Well, you know,
there are a few good endings.
This movie will make that point over and over
again. There's so much meta shit with Stephen King on that exact point.
Well, now they're... Oh, Steve, you're a great writer, but your ending's got to suck. Yeah, I know.
Well, the first film was, of course, The Losers Club fighting Pennywise the Clown, who is more than just a clown. He's a Lovecraftian force of the universe that's been sitting here for millions of years waiting to eat children.
I hear he's part of, technically, their other creatures in the...
spider.
It's a she... which they don't do in this movie. And it's pregnant. It has eggs, which they don't do in this movie. And apparently, if you read that whole Dark Tower series, which I have not. Apparently,
either.
There are some creatures in it that are very similar to Pennywise. But somehow, millions of years ago, one of these crazy fucking things landed on our planet and ended up in what is now known as Terry Mason.
They're the Prim creatures, and they're like these creatures from in between the dimensions in his like multiverse. And that's what it is.
It's the macroverse. I lose track.
It's Stephen King's half-assed shared universe. Okay?
Yeah.
It's like, it's kind of a shared universe. I'm just going to throw in the name Flag every once in a while.
That's right. No Randall Flag in this movie.
And I'm roping in Joe Hill, my son.
Yeah.
He's also in this universe.
I'm honestly surprised that Joe Hill didn't have a cameo in this film. I will say Stephen King gave his longest on-screen cameo in any film.
Wait a minute.
It was really good.
Yeah.
King took some acting lessons. He's not bad here.
Well, are you forgetting Creepshow?
Yeah, Creepshow, he has a whole
sequence. Oh, that's true.
He had a whole sequence.
But that doesn't count as a cameo, because he is actually a full-on actor. And that is not
a great performance. The Lonely Death of
Joey, whatever. It's not? You don't like him being dumb...
It's funny, but it's not good acting.
It's not.
He has comedic chops. What are you talking about?
Well, here the losers
he was also
the
high as fuck that whole period.
Yeah. We saw in the first film, the Losers Club is all represented as children to great acclaim. All these kids are going to go on to bigger and better things. I think there's no question.
With really good chemistry.
Yes. Oh, yes.
Because we're going to touch on that.
So they defeated it the first time around in a sort of like...
It was a standoff. It's a stalemate.
Yeah, it's a stalemate. Like we canceled the apocalypse for now, but like
Pennywise is canceled.
Yeah, and 27.
We're gonna
years,
table this for 27 years.
And 27, they made the agreement. They like cut their hands with a piece of broken glass.
Blood oath.
If this ever comes back, we'll all be back here. And only one of them has actually stayed in the town.
Mike.
I play by here Isaiah Mustafa, who has stayed as a librarian in Derry.
What? Taylor's a librarian.
And lives in the attic of the library.
Also an Old Spice spokesman, so he's the best-smelling librarian
you'll
ever meet.
Is that why you look familiar?
Yes.
Really?
Holy crap.
I believe he was the Old Spice spokesman for a while.
Oh.
Before Terry Crews. I could be wrong.
No, you're right. You're right. That is him. I was like, there's something about him, but I did not put that together because he looks so different here.
I feel like there's something about all of these actors. Well, except for the ones that you absolutely recognize. And you're sure. Like, okay, I know McAvoy and I know...
All these people look familiar.
And Hader. But then there are the other people where you're like, whoa, who is this guy? Where do I recognize
him? Well, that's the thing. Is they're all older versions. So what we have is Jessica Chastain is now playing Beverly Marsh, played by Sophia Lillis, who also, for the record, all the kids also appear in this film. Mm-hmm. They've fused in a lot of stuff we didn't see in the first film with them now. James McAvoy is Bill, played originally by Jaden Martell. Jay Ryan is Ben Haskam, who was originally played by Jeremy Ray Taylor. Bill Hader is Richie, played originally by Finn Wolfhard, who's just having a moment right now. Jesus Christ. Doing this
several.
And Stranger Things, where you're just kind of like...
Ghostbusters?
I saw someone post today going like, hey, Stranger Things, it's okay now to just say that that he's gay in Stranger Things because they made it canon in it, Chapter 2.
Yeah.
Basically, Finn Wolfhard will not stop until he's rebooted my entire childhood.
Isaiah Mustafa is Mike, played originally by Chosen Jacobs. James Ranson is Eddie, played originally by Jake Dylan Grazier. And Andy Bean is Stanley, played originally by Wyatt Olef. Now, you were saying, which character were you were like, who is that guy?
Stanley guy? I was like, where do I recognize him from? And he's like in two episodes of the Swamp Thing. He's like Alex.
He is. He played Alec Holland.
Yeah, Alec Holland.
That's why he looked familiar.
Yeah, I was like, but it's like all of, I had that sense.
And Wyatt Olef also was the young Star-Lord.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. I didn't get that.
Young star. Like, all of these actors, I'm like, where do I know this person?
All these actors are legit. None of them came out of nowhere.
Jay Ryan was in the New Zealand program that turned into a big hit for Netflix, Top of the Lake, that had Gillian Anderson in it.
Mm.
As well as a couple other New Zealand and Australian things. But he's one of those guys, I'm like, you're very handsome, and he was playing the fat kid in the original one, so that's kind of the thing, like, Jesus Christ, what happened to
they
you?
They gave him an extended ab shot, like, so unnecessary.
Make a point of going, like, dude does not have a gut anymore. But, like, that's, like, one of the central things here is that all the adults, and this is a Stephen King trope for sure, can't really remember exactly what happened.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And that's a supernatural aspect of it. It's like, no, when you leave the town, you will start to fade from it. Only Mike really remembers. And because of that, even the stuff where, was it Beverly?
Beverly
and Ben, who kind of had a moment in the original, she can't really remember.
Yeah.
She has this memory of someone writing her a poem, and she thinks...
Like, she always thought it was Bill.
Well, it was not addressed, and Bill was the writer, and so she just thought, you know. Yeah.
And so there's a kind of a love triangle thing going on.
And the people who left, they became super successful, and Mike, he stayed, and he was a librarian.
I was just going to say.
Obviously, he wasn't very successful.
So he was very successful.
But they're all, you know, they're actors, or they're clothing designers, or they're like...
Everyone on the whole, except for Mike, has done very well
for
themselves.
Yeah, and that's because they all left, and they kind of forgot all this dark behind them, and then, you know...
It's also pointed out in the book that all of them went away for 27 years. They forgot their childhood. They all became successful in their chosen fields, and... Believe me, I'm not one of those people who thinks you have any worth. You know, I don't judge your worth by whether or not you have kids. But that's a point in the book that none of you all had kids. Some of you got married. Some of you didn't.
Some part of that stuck with you.
But there was some part of you that was just like, was not going to bring other children into this world.
You say everybody did well, except for Beverly, who married very rich, but she's in as
his, but, let's think
tied into her.
They're all on the surface happy.
They're all not. Yeah, and... Each person, they kind of, it fits their own, like, theme, their own, like, little character arc. She marries basically someone who's, like, exactly like her father.
Dad. Yeah. She repeats the cycle of abuse.
And same thing with Eddie. He marries someone who's exactly like his mother.
Yeah.
Right. So.
But, like, there, in the book, there was a thing where two of the significant others, Beverly's wife and
Beverly's
Bill's
husband,
wife,
Tom.
I'm sorry, Beverly's husband and Bill's wife and followed them to the town and had their own arcs. Yeah. And I thought wisely they chose to keep that out of there.
But they should have cast his wife as Jessica Chastain. Or, sorry, what's that? What's the other girl's name? Bryce Dallas Howard.
Yeah,
they should have cast Bryce Dallas Howard as his
I
wife.
I heard they cast the woman from Teeth. That's who played
that was her.
Audra.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, in,
who used to be Jessica Chastain's roommate in real life.
I did not know that.
Well, that's how I mean, they they're supposed to look exactly alike. Like, he married, similar. You know, his...
Somebody who looks... And so Bryce Dallas Howard would have been the obvious choice.
And to me,
Or Amy Adams would have been a much better choice.
Oh, Amy Adams. Yeah, that would have been...
That was my choice for Beverly, adult Beverly.
What's the other one? There's another one.
But Jessica Chastain had already worked with the director in Mama, so of
there's another one who everyone compares with Amy Adams, and I'm forgetting her name.
All redheads are hot to me.
Isla Fisher, or Isla or something.
However,
yeah, but yes, you're like you have that list of like Chastain's at the top, and then it just starts going. No, I'm sorry, Amy Adams is at the top. Chastain is like right barely below her, and then you have like several steps below. You get to Isla Fisher and Bryce Dallas Howard.
Yeah. I don't have a thing for redhead chicks, so I don't know.
Yeah, fair. I got them all.
We have a chart with yarn attaching in the middle.
Yarn.
It's like you haven't seen his redhead conspiracy board. Yeah. You should check it out.
It's
so much red
all
yarn,
all tied into the JFK assassination.
That's right. Back into the left. Back into the left.
So, like. Them all coming here, I think everyone was very nervous about, like, going into the adult part of the story because, for one thing, in the book, the adult part is not the better part of the story.
Yeah.
You know.
It's also spliced in, too. Right. It happens simultaneously. Yeah. The adults remember, and then you have your segments,
right.
Like, where it's all the childhood
I can imagine someone watching that first It movie and going, oh, I'm going to read the book, and thinking halfway through they're going to reach the end of the original of the previous movie, and they realize, oh, to get the end of chapter one, you still have it's not until like 900 pages in.
Yeah.
You know, it's constantly on top of each other. And that is one of the weird structural missteps of this movie, I think, because there was a decision made to split it and tell it linearly. And they do that in the first film. And here in the second film, where it should all be the adults, they go, yeah, but we like those kids. Let's bring them back.
I mean, I get their reasoning, and I think it adds a lot to it personally.
I agree with Marco.
I never read the book.
I mean, do it one way or the other.
Yeah, I actually found a lot more impact by revisiting the kids, and you were saying earlier when we were talking before the review, Marco, how like. You felt like you weren't getting truly the feeling of these bonds of these people and what they were. And I thought that having these sequences, new sequences, they're not like, it's not the Exorcist 2. They're not flashing back to footage we've already seen.
It's de-aged
stuff we did not see. Like, that new stuff really, to me, was watching all these pieces as they're slowly remembering these things themselves because they forgot all these moments.
But if you take the kids' stuff out, you don't buy the bond of the adults. They're not given enough time.
There's
that Chinese restaurant scene where if anybody is old enough, you and I are much older than these two guys, so you know what it's like.
No, I know. The moment they show up, we're sitting there talking, and we feel fine. And they show up all young and pretty.
I feel so old and saggy now.
They're just like these supermodels show up and are like, we want to review the movie with you old farts.
Right.
for the record, Zach and I are very short.
Yes, but very cute. But the point is, though, when you hang out with friends you haven't seen in like 20 years, it's amazing because it's happened to me where I've hooked up with old college friends and we get together as a group and you just sort of almost instantly start falling back into those old rhythms.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter what you are now. You revert to what you were then.
Yeah.
And I love that about that Chinese restaurant scene, because especially with like the Richie and Eddie stuff.
Yeah, that's
so
the first,
when you see them as kids, you go, of course, they're reverting to their childhood.
That's the first place they all meet back up again.
But if you don't see that, you don't believe it.
Because Mike has put out the phone call, it started again in Derry. And when they all get back together in Derry, the killings have started again, and none of them were really remember completely, but all of them have kind of traumatic experiences when they get the call. One of the ones that is very like sets up this right away is James McAvoy, whose hand starts aching immediately, and he doesn't understand
he
why.
He gets the Harry Potter.
Yeah, he gets the Horcrux mark. Yeah,
and his stutter comes back.
Yeah, and that's the idea, that scar from where they all agreed to meet up again. And so, yeah, meeting up in the Chinese restaurant, which is a very, like, fun scene, and they set you up like, oh, I'm having a good time watching this, although to some degree you kind of feel bad for the one guy who everybody's fucking picking on.
Yeah.
You know, they're jumping all over him.
I was feeling bad for the people that were going to have to clean up the mess that they made.
But then everything, but they do a good job of that scene goes on long enough where you completely are just enjoying this great ensemble of actors having a good time together, and then when it turns to horror, which you know is going to happen at some point, it kind of makes it, it sets the tone just right. And I think the movie throughout it, as they're kind of like, and you didn't like the fact that this version of it has them go, you all need to go off on your own to get like,
literal plot tokens.
Little
horcruxes.
Literal plot tokens.
From your past life. But I felt like it was a good way of representing like that crossover between the previous story and this
it
one.
It works
and
in
who
the
they
book.
Are.
It, this is, and you're going to hear me say this more than once, and because we were talking earlier about Haunting of Hill House, Mike Flanagan has proven you can do long form horror and it's going to be very satisfying. There is nothing in this movie I can go and say they should cut that. That sucks. That's off.
Agreed.
No, all of it's good. This is like a 12 course meal where everything is tasty, but I'm like, God damn it. I have had enough to eat. Can I please just stop now? I think this would have been so much better as a series.
Oh, I completely agree. I was thinking about that watching this. Like, I was going, it's 2 hours and 48 minutes, and you're going, for fuck's sakes, this is a long time to spend watching this movie. But at the same time, there's no moment I'm like, I would have lost that.
Yeah.
In fact, I kept going, why wasn't this Netflix or HBO instead? You know, this should have been
because
had
that
the time
wasn't
to breathe.
That wasn't an option when they started developing this thing.
Yeah,
it took years for them to get it up this far. I think now, if they were starting now, they'd be like, "Let's do it as a miniseries." You've already got the perfect man for the job. You got Flanagan, who's already done a Netflix miniseries based on a Stephen King novel. You've already got him doing, you know, Haunting of Hill House. I would love to see 10 hours of this cast at a leisurely pace where all of these moments are allowed to land rather than just kind of ramming it through.
I could have done without all of the kids stuff for me personally.
This movie?
Yeah, in this movie, because we'd already seen all of that and it was just reminding me of the first movie and how cohesive that first movie is. And
agreed.
This movie, it's like, all right, we have all the characters together. Now we're splitting them up. Now they're going to this thing. Now there's a flashback.
Here's the thing that I
very jarring
about it, them being split up, though, is it gave me more scenes with Pennywise. Because if they had put them all together, we would have had less scenes of Pennywise coming in and fucking shit up. And Skarsgård is my favorite part of this movie.
And he's sidelined for a lot of this movie.
Well, I mean, I agree with you, Taylor. Like, I love all of those sequences. It takes a movie which hasn't gotten scary yet. Like we have the Chinese sequence, but it's not scary. It's more just prepping you to be scary. And then it actually gets kind of scary with those separate sequences, which I honestly think are the scariest parts of the film.
Mm-hmm.
With the exception of, which is funny, but the Bill Hader, Paul Bunyan sequence is just kind of goofy.
The Paul Bunyan sequence.
I'm glad they did that.
It looks cool.
It's right out of the book.
It looks cool, but it's the one that you're like, this is kind of goofy.
Well, that was the one I was thinking, they're not going to do, because they didn't do like the Firebird from the book. I was like, okay, they're not going to do that. They're not going to do the big ass Paul Bunyan, and they did it.
Well, they tease you with the Paul Bunyan in the first film. You think, oh, you're going to get it. And you're like, okay, it's just an Easter egg. The Paul Bunyan's there. Now we get the Paul Bunyan. The weird thing is that there's a really good sequence where the adult Eddie goes to the pharmacy, a pharmacy that has been a big part of his life, and it's a really effective scene. But this is one of my problems with the movie, is that Muschietti, again, there's nothing in here that's bad, but he has this weird tendency to ratchet up the tension and then completely dissipate it with humor. And usually I appreciate that, but he does it so consistently and to the point where it doesn't make sense. Like, there is a moment And I won't spoil where exactly it occurs, but there is a music cue that literally comes out of nowhere.
I loved it. I laughed so hard.
I did too. The thing is, because it's a Langolier reference.
Oh, is it really?
Yeah. That's the only, it's not, has nothing to do with the book. That particular song is a big moment in the Langoliers. It has nothing to do with fucking it. Likewise, there's also a Shining reference or two in here that has nothing to fucking do with it.
Yeah.
But it's just there because, like, hey, get that? Remember that? It's a joke, right? And it kills the horror. It kills the tension. I'm okay with it becoming funny, but don't play it for 5 seconds or less, and then it just kills the tension. If you're going to commit to it, score that whole sequence with that song. Then it starts to become weird.
Here's why that didn't bother me. Because although they were trying to do the thing where you take practical...
Also, you love Juice Newton. I do.
And tweak it with CG, there's a little over the top on the CG at points. A lot of this, the CG stuff is just very cartoonish and silly. But it's so creatively designed that I'm like, even though this is not convincingly done CG... It's fun to watch because you put a lot of thought into the way these creatures and the scenarios are designed around them. But I like that I'm not going to be scared by this totally. Yeah. So it kind of makes it just more fun. And a movie that can't total, a horror movie like this, that can't, is not going to keep you completely frightened out of your mind, should at least make you laugh. And I thought that it did a good mix of those.
That song had no relation to the scene.
Don't call me Angel, Marco.
Not in the morning.
It's so weird. It's like this tone, it's very serious, it's very horror, and it's very funny. So it's kind of odd to me.
Yeah.
Like, it's strange.
I mean, they're literally
doing bits. Super but it's
strange.
Consistent. It's a consistent
and there's never,
tone.
There's never
a new moment. Horror style, really.
Yeah, there's never really a sequence where I go, this doesn't feel like the whole rest of the movie.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, they keep, even in the third act, they're keeping up humor moments here and there, poking
but
at it.
But that's what it should be most tense. Like, there's a Pomeranian scene, which is very
funny. Awesome.
It's awesome. Yeah. But it's like, you know what's happening. You, the characters, know what's happening. Why are you doing a comedy bit?
Should have been a corgi.
Yeah.
Because you got Bill Hader in there. Like,
see, the thing is, that's the other thing they did with Eddie. They made him a comic character, too.
Yeah.
And Eddie's a great character. And I love that those two have so much chemistry. Both, those are the only pairing, that's the only pairing where the adults and the children have equal weight. Eddie and Richie, and it's amazing because they're both great characters in the book, but they're never really that identified together. These films put them together, and it's hilarious, but I'm like, your friends are literally dying right now. This is not the moment to be having a little yuck laugh. It's like, because you guys obviously know what's happening here.
I feel like I want to talk about chemistry because the kids had chemistry, and that really like
out the wazoo.
Yeah, I mean, it really just was the glue that held everything together. And for me, that's maybe where this is falling apart. Other than this is a string of like really good set pieces that like. To me, Taylor, you said it's awesome that you get all these characters alone so they can meet Pennywise by themselves. But the plot, like, that holds that bit together doesn't make any fucking sense to me. Or it needed better crafting. Like,
what do you mean, exactly?
Like, okay, go get a totem, and then now we're quickly moving through each character's, like, set piece. Just felt like, all right, here's a character set piece, here's their flashback, now the next character set piece, now the next character's
and
flashback.
And you have six of them, so you have to sit through six of them.
Yeah, it felt tiring.
I mean, you say sit through, but I enjoyed every single one of them.
They're all individually good, but
as a whole, you're just sitting there, and you're like, okay, well, I know that these characters aren't going to die till the end, so there's
isn't
like,
that what a movie is? You sit there and watch characters not die till
thank
the end.
You. Thank you.
I no, actually get really...
Zach only likes movies
but,
where people
but
die
also,
constantly.
But also,
I actually get really annoyed with movies that feel like... horror movies that feel like they have to kill a character every so many minutes, and I'm like... No, I don't really think you do. I mean, like, when we were talking about the comparison to the Dream Warriors, always for me, one of the biggest problems of the Dream Warriors is they felt the need to keep killing the characters as it went.
Wait, you mean
of,
it wasn't the Dawkins soundtrack?
Instead of having them actually narrowly escape, which would have made for a more interesting movie.
So, these adult actors.
But the
like,
chemistry.
The chemistry with them is just, like, not... Like, James McAvoy, he's not coming off as a leader at all
to me. Yeah, well, he did it when he was a baby boy in the first movie.
Well, I disagree. I felt like Bill was a leader in that first movie.
He totally was a leader.
And then Ben is just like... Who is this guy? He's just off to himself.
He's just the guy who's not fat anymore.
Yeah, that's all he is.
I don't disagree.
As an adult, he's just like a model.
Not the actor's fault.
He's just the model.
He has the thing where it's like, yes, he's not fat anymore. Oh my God, look how hot he is. And to be part of this love triangle thing.
In the book, if I recall correctly, Ben's like an alcoholic. He's hot, but he's lonely, and he's like an alcoholic.
Here he's like super successful, like an architect.
And this both movies have actually improved the character of Richie, because Richie's like a fan favorite in the book, and I always thought he was annoying, not funny at all. They make him a really lovable character in both of these, and oddly enough, they put so much. One of the weird things, if you've read the book and you've watched these films, you'll realize that Muschietti and company and Gary Dobbin are the writers and the other guys, they've taken certain characteristics from all of these characters from the book and reshuffled them.
Mm-hmm.
Like in the first movie, Ben is like the little historian. That was Mike's role. That's why Mike felt so diminished in the first movie. Here, the adult Mike, you see, like, no, you are the librarian. You are the historian. They took that away from him. They took away the fact that Beverly was the marksman. She was the sharpshooter with the slingshot. You know, Bill was the leader. You see that in the first movie, but... You kind of feel like Mike and Richie are moving things along.
Yeah, well, and that's because
Eddie wasn't the comic relief.
Like
Richie was.
Richie and Eddie, as adults, like they have the chemistry.
Yeah.
I mean, not to me. I thought the kids had a little bit better chemistry
than they did.
But like all of the adults, it's just like these actors are great by themselves, but together, like they're. The scenes just weren't working for
They're not
me.
Given like, enough time to be together.
Yeah, they didn't feel cohesive. They didn't feel like they were really, like, actually hanging out and, like, growing
Except
together.
For that Chinese restaurant scene.
In terms of, like, why that is, I don't agree with you being a bad thing. Because I think the point is that these people who thought after this experience their lives are going to be great when we first see them, like, wow, their lives are great. Their lives are not great. They are traumatized in a way that they can't understand because they can't remember where it came from. And when they get together, there is immediately discomfort and no one really wants to be together because on some level they understand without understanding why this is like horrible that they're all together again. And the movie's goal is to, by the end, bring them all back together where they genuinely care about each other again. And that has to be overcome by a lot of like very difficult non-chemistry sequences.
Yeah.
That really worked for me quite a bit. In fact, one of my favorite moments in this entire film, there's a moment where something really bad is happening to a character and who's the asthma guy?
Eddie
is frozen and he can't move. And they're like, Eddie, help, Eddie, help. And he just can't move. And Bill just starts going off on him when it's all over. He's like, what the fuck is wrong with you? We needed your help. And there's this totally real, earned, honest moment where Eddie is like, I'm so sorry. I was just too scared.
Don't be mad at me.
Please don't be mad at me.
Yeah.
And it really feels real. And it's one of those moments where you're like, you can see what was the intent of keeping them not having a huge amount of chemistry like they did at first. That they have to grow back together. They have to understand each other again. And I really liked that aspect of it.
No, I like that. I mean, that's, again, it's a moment where you get to see McAvoy play Bill as the leader of the group.
But he's a shitty leader. He's just yelling at him.
He's almost more broken than anyone.
He is, but because he's riddled with guilt. But Bill is the one, because Bill is also the one who's been most directly impacted by Pennywise, because his brother's killed in the first film. But yeah, you see that moment of the young Bill going, I'm really pissed off at you right now, Eddie, but I understand why, and we got to stick together. That moment, I agree with you, Chris. That is a really nice moment. It just took me too long, in my opinion, to get to that point. And I really wanted to see him step up a little bit. He's much better written in the book. And I think part of it is because they have split the focus of this movie so much. You have that luxury in a novel. And we're talking about a novel that is 1,100 pages long.
Yeah.
This is the second half, and it is at least 30, 40 minutes longer than the previous installment. And they are trying desperately to not only tell a lot of story, but reforge those connections. And I love every little moment of this film, except as a whole. And it's a really weird thing where it does not become equal to the sum of its parts. And the individual parts are great, but as a whole, I'm like, God damn it. I just needed more time to spend with these characters because I love these characters and I want to spend more time with them.
It's at worst for me is some of the wonkiness of the CG. Although I didn't even realize they de-aged the young characters. I saw other people complaining about it.
I was wondering about that. Yeah,
you can see it if you're looking for it.
My assumption was right off the bat they must have filmed this during the first film.
That would have been smart.
I never noticed.
If they knew what they were doing.
Richie looked weird.
He looked weird as fuck.
I noticed it.
Because that kid looks nothing like he does now.
I was not looking for it. So I guess that was part of it, maybe.
I wasn't either, but I was like, his face looks strange.
Yeah.
His face does look strange, though.
Well, yeah.
But it's very different, and it's very clear that, yes, they should have shot that stuff earlier.
Yeah.
And it's very clear to me that they shot the first film, and then they spent 2 years going, well, fuck, what are we going to do to
all
top
these
this?
Kids went through puberty, shit.
We gotta, but it's like, no, if you knew where the story was going, you could have adjusted for it. There's a lot of elements that were introduced in the first film that are dropped here, or vice versa. And I do feel like it's a case of, let's make the first one, and then we'll figure out how to do the second one.
But we mentioned very briefly how good Skarsgård is once again playing Pennywise. And I really do think he's terrific here.
He's so good.
Like, he is way creepy. I mean, full credit to Bill, who, it's not CG. He can really make one eye go off to the side like that. And it's just super unsettling.
But his command of his voice is so cool. It's like so impressive.
Agreed. There's a sequence here. There's two actual child killings in this movie, and both of them are, I think, two of the scariest moments in the entire film. And both of them, Skarsgård is just nailing it during both those sequences. Like, fuck, dude, when it's just you giving your all, you're scary.
Yeah. And those are scenes not in the book. Yeah. And that's what I love about it. It's like you added something new, and boy, it's great. That scene with the little girl under the bleachers.
That's my favorite scene.
My dad was really a coach. Great. I spent a lot of my childhood at baseball stadia or like little league baseball stadiums. And everybody used to love to hang out under the bleachers, just chill out. And it's so creepy and weird down there. I had so many like little memories like, oh my God.
Did you float down there?
I did. but it was that weird, like, I never really thought about how creepy. That's what Stephen King does really well, even though he didn't write that scene originally. That's where the movie succeeds.
It's like a mix of nostalgia with fear.
It takes something like, this is something you remember. Now, what if I really fucked it up for you? And the way he does it, because, look, everybody's like, I tell people constantly, when you and I, Chris, when we were kids, we weren't scared of clowns. Nobody was scared of clowns.
No.
People didn't get scared of clowns until the late 70s, early 80s. Now everybody talks about clowns as terrifying, like it's always been that way.
I like clowns. It's like the Bozo show.
Yeah. Exactly. Emmett Kelly. I mean, you know, all of these things. We grew up with clowns. They weren't scary. It doesn't happen until John Wayne Gacy. And Stephen King's It.
Yeah.
I have had professional clowns tell me that It fucked up their livelihood.
Aww.
So, because now kids are scared of clowns. So why does Pennywise adopt the form of a clown? Because in the 80s, at least, by then, it could still persuade children to come and talk to you.
Can you imagine if King had decided to make it about a mime instead?
You know?
Then we all would have been fine with it.
And they're like, I don't understand. Good. Are you asking me to come over? Just say something.
No,
why are you making these weird noises? Why are you making these weird motions with your hand? Just tell me if you want me to come over there. No, but that
oh,
moment.
Oh, shit, I'm trapped in a box.
That's right. Oh, my God, I'm in an ever-shrinking cube. But that moment where he convinces the little girl and he relates to her. And, like, you know, commiserates with her a little bit over their appearances. That is so horrific. That is so cruel and manipulative. And it's one of the best scenes in the movie.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
that's when you go, that's why he's a fucking clown, because he can disarm children and make them, you know, want to side with him. And putting him under bleachers was just like, oh my God, I could have been that kid. Oh, 40 years ago, it was terrifying. I've
been under those bleachers so many times.
Yeah, well, you know, we're talking about the same place, but at different times in our lives.
Fair enough. First hand job. Anyway, let's go to final thoughts, and then we'll do a little bit of spoiler talk. Okay. Who wants to go first? I usually call it, but who wants to go first?
I'll go first.
All right.
I think y'all are going way too easy on this movie.
Oh, I knew it.
It's kind of boring. Like, I don't like the way they interact with each other when they're adults. I was really digging the way they were as kids, and then I feel like they really dropped the ball. The plot's not doesn't hold it together for me. And then the endings. The multiple endings, there's so many of them.
It does get a little return.
Someone is writing a letter and reading it, and it's so fucking cheesy. It doesn't earn, like, half the shit, that it's so preachy. This movie will preach to you like no one's business, and you feel it. You're like, oh, man, I'm sitting down listening to the preacher here.
it's all Robert Tilton.
Yeah, fuck. I don't know. I mean, Marco, what you said. The individual scenes are all fucking awesome, but like when you map out the narrative of this garbage, it's just like, Jesus. Oh yeah, come back to Derry and like, oh yeah, like let's get high, and then their chemistry is just like doesn't work for me. So I'm gonna give it a 5 out of 10 typical Stephen King endings where he looks at his audience and he shrugs and he goes, aliens?
Taylor, take this motherfucker down. Give you a review.
Okay, I mean, this movie is not great.
Oh, Jesus.
It's not, but I thoroughly enjoyed it. Like, the beginning is dumb, the ending is dumb, but all the stuff in between is really fun to me. It has the strangest tone that I have experienced with what we were talking about. Like, it's super serious, and then it, like, immediately cuts it with humor that you're like, what? But you still kind of like it.
Midsummer-y a little bit.
Okay, since you brought up Midsummer.
Midsummer never dropped in a Juice Newton
needle
drop.
No. I'm not in terms of
the director's
of, like,
cut's not out yet.
The random comedy that comes in, that's not what reminded me of Midsummer, but like this movie to me did the tension correctly. Like Midsummer, it wasn't scary. This movie also wasn't very scary. Mm-hmm. But Midsummer tried to do the tension thing, failed. This movie did the tension thing, and for me it worked. Like all those individual vignettes with the characters, like even if they weren't scary, they were tense, and I was, like, feeling for the characters. Pennywise is awesome. Skarsgård is, like, super, super, super good. He's my favorite part of the movie. All of the scenes with him are my favorites. And even the scenes with him, they do that weird comedy thing, too, where it's like, I can't tell if the filmmakers are being serious or if they're making a joke out of, like, how stupid something looks or comes across. Like, they do this totally weird effect on his face in one scene. And I just laughed. I was like, I don't understand. Are they trying to be funny or are they trying to be scary?
I think
like,
it's kind of
even,
a mix of the two.
I know. Yeah. I don't even know. But
we were saying earlier how, like, it's almost like he's trying to invent something new of a horror comedy.
I liked
that's
it.
Not either one.
Yeah.
It reminded me of Tim and Eric's bedtime stories.
Yes, where it's just weird.
It's horror, but
it's just
also
weird.
It's like it's intentionally absurd in a way that is supposed to make you creeped out and laugh at the same time.
And I
see
like
a Dr. Fibes, something like that. Where it's
I like
funny
weird.
And silly.
So for
or
me,
scary.
I didn't, and I'm not going to get all pissy about plot because I'm not a writer. So.
Neither is Zach, if you ask some people.
Oh.
Hey, neither is Stephen King, if you ask some
so
people.
Sad. So
you're talking to Will Valley over there.
I'm going to give this a rating that is not based on how good the movie actually is, because it would be bad. I'm going to give it a rating based on how much I liked it. Because when you see a movie, you care about how much you like it, not how technically good it is. So I'm going to give it a 7 out of 10 hate crimes.
Fair. Marco.
You know, I have a lot of history with this book. I read it when it first came out when I was a child.
Now, you haven't made that clear at all.
I read it as an I read it as an adult when I was the same age as these kids. So I'm looking at this through a very different lens than some people who are coming to it for the first time. And yet, I've bitched a lot about this, and I will continue to bitch about this movie. But there are also a lot of things I loved about it. And I'm kind of going along with what Taylor said, is that I can only review it based on how I felt watching it, which was occasionally tired, but also more often than not, really enjoying all of the individual elements of it.
Marco gets it.
It is, you know, the first film was like a 4-course meal that you really enjoyed, and you felt maybe a little stuffed, but you're like, hey, you don't get to eat like this every day. Just enjoy it. This was like a 12-course meal, and you're like, I'm a little bit done. And Machete and his company are like, no, here's another plate. Eat this.
We haven't even gotten to the main course yet.
Keep going. Where's more? Don't wait. Leave some room for dessert. I'm like, I really would have appreciated if this had been paced out a little bit more. And I think the only way to do that, I can't blame the filmmakers. They're working within a theatrical model. They have to do two films. I get it. I really wish this had been a series. I think Mike Flanagan, for example, has proven you can do horror in long form. I think this would be great, and Muschietti has already talked about perhaps rejuggling some of this material and doing it in an episodic format. I don't know if that'll ever happen. Maybe he doesn't need to do it, but it'd be kind of interesting to see it. Nevertheless, even though I wish it had been a little bit tighter, a little more concise, and had not undercut the horror with humor as often as it did, I still had a good time with this. I still love these characters, and I still think there's a way to salvage some of this material, perhaps in a later cut. Maybe a week from now my opinion will change, but for now I'm going to say I give this 7.5 out of 10 blood-filled balloons.
I found this startling and weird, and I mean both those things in a good way. My biggest problem is exactly what the hell's your name, Marco?
I said.
Mikko.
We haven't met. It's been 27 years since we've met. Who are you? Were we friends? I don't remember.
You both have scars on your palms.
Oh, shit.
Is that what that is?
Oh, damn. I thought that was like a masturbation wound.
Yeah. It was. Were you under the bleachers?
It was that extreme period of my life. I don't talk about it anymore.
That was you? Damn, you've not aged well.
More of you, buddy.
Anyway, yes, I found myself going, I like everything you're trying to put into this. Even though it's 2 hours and 48 minutes, and I'm like, I want to keep watching this. I also want to go take a break for an hour. Yeah. This is like, it's a lot of stuff to cram into one film. And I think they do about as good of a job in terms of getting all the elements in a character way in as you could do in 2 hours and 48 minutes, which I know, that's super long. It's 1,100 page book. Yeah. This is a massive undertaking. And the first film is solely focused on the kids.
This is 5 minutes longer than Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
This film is the kids and the adults. So you're like, God damn, this is a lot of stuff to take in. There are moments I thought were really amazing. There are moments I thought were like absurd but fun. And there are some moments I was like, I don't know if I would have kept that in, but I don't really hate it either. The Paul Bunyan moment is the most egregious for me, where I'm like, this is so silly. But that's endemic of, I think, the weirdness that Machete is chasing after here. I mean, reference Nightmare on Elm Street 3 in the original. This one references Nightmare on Elm Street 5, which seems more appropriate. That level of Freddy when he's just turned absurd.
Well, it is 5, actually.
Is it 5 in the first one, too? Okay.
Because it's summer 89.
Right. And I'm like, 5 is an absurd movie with Freddy turning into bizarre creatures. This film kind of takes that idea, this goofy fucking dream killer, and finds a way to where, like, there's something deeply upsetting about that absurdity of it, which the Nightmare on Elm Street movies, once they got into the goofiness, never managed to really achieve correctly. It felt like this would have been the right way to come at it. Like, there's something about that absurdity that is in and of itself upsetting. I only wish that the CG had been a little bit better for these things.
There were some practical effects.
Yeah, well, like I said, a lot of it was practical where they were tweaking it with CG, which is the way to do it.
Yeah.
But the CG still needed another couple passes to make it completely
scary
work.
Mrs. Kirch. Oh, she was awful with CG.
I will say
when she got bit, when she grew giant.
I thought the first appearance
and
of
it makes
that,
no sense.
If you guys have seen the trailer, which is just Jessica Chastain and like going to her old house with an old lady there, which is a super fucking creepy sequence.
Yeah.
What you don't see is the way that all plays out with a really huge CG creepy old lady thing,
and your cock ring will fall right off.
And you get flaccid immediately.
Yeah.
And I found it very startling for 2 seconds, and then I was kind of laughing at it.
Yeah.
But that's kind of like the way this goes. A lot of the things that are happening with Pennywise along the way and his transformations and other things are that. It's really startling for a second or two, and then you're just kind of laughing. Yeah. And I'm not sure it works as well as Muschietti wanted it to, but it's interesting. I'm like, this is, as we all agreed.
How much creepier would it have been if it's just the guy who was playing her father?
Right. This is as
that's
we
what
all
did in the miniseries.
This is as we all.
That's what she's scared of. Not some
not,
old lady.
Let's not compare this to the miniseries. I honestly like there's no question that I'm going to say like the guy playing Pennywise in the original, Tim Curry is fantastic. Yes. But overall, that miniseries doesn't hold.
No, it's not very. Very good
movies.
But there's a few things it did better. Not many, though.
Not many. And overall, I think both these movies are deeply entertaining films. It just, you're probably better off watching it at home where you can pause it and go take a break and start.
Ice sandwich.
They're both exhaustingly long. It should have been a miniseries.
Well, they feel episodic. Yeah. This movie feels like little episodic sequences.
I would have loved that Chinese restaurant. Half of that is one
episode.
Should
have
episode
been a whole episode. That whole thing should have been one episode.
That would have been a great episode of just the Chinese restaurant. That would have been a great hour of
and
television.
We're at that point with TV, high-profile TV, where this is the sort of thing that someone can afford to do with, like, probably for better quality to some degree.
That'd be like the funeral home scene in Haunting of Hill House.
Which, by the way, was the best single episode of TV in, like, 4 years, I think.
I agree.
Yeah.
That's
just saying.
Yeah.
Anyway, yeah, I found this very enjoyable, but also very exhausting. I'm going to give it 7.5 out of 10. Times I was like, are you not going to reference that French movie, The Red Balloon? Because I kept waiting for it the whole time. It just felt like, where's that? Reference everything else, not that.
Yeah.
It only seemed appropriate. Oh, wait, we were going to talk spoilers. I'm sorry. I took
Can
a break.
Can we take
there.
A pee break at least?
No, we cannot take a pee
God
break.
God damn it,
talk
I'll
spoilers.
Oh, wait.
First off, I do want to.
Okay, we can start.
I do want to say, I love the fact that. The whole reason for them throwing in the meta joke of like telling Bill's character, oh, your endings suck, but we love the rest of the book, which is a joke right directed at Stephen King.
Yeah.
The reason it's actually there is Muschietti defending keeping the giant spider in.
Yeah, I was gonna say he's shitting on Stephen King. And the ending is a giant spider?
No,
that's
no,
a video. Yo, weird. You mean that video game sequence where you have to run around the cavern and, like, just keep avoiding Pennywise and then long enough to, like, attack him again?
I mean,
that felt like a video game
cutscene. He's defending that choice in that meta joke because at one point the hater's telling his wife, I don't. What's wrong with just keeping this ending?
But
like,
he does change
do it?
The
and
ending.
He really does try to go, I want to keep the ending. I just got to find a way to make it work because even he acknowledges King didn't make it work and he didn't.
The key to that is keeping Pennywise in there.
Yeah.
And that is the thing that people forget over and over and over. They've treated Pennywise like he's Freddy Krueger. Pennywise is just one manifestation of it. Pennywise isn't the most important thing in the movie or the book. But because he's so iconic now.
I think he should be there.
That's what it becomes. So even when it's the big spider thing, even when he's a tiny, shriveling, little, deflated, podling fucker,
then you're like, that point where you would have died.
Which is,
no,
oh,
I
would have
died. Like,
which is not,
he was saying,
not exactly the book.
You would have picked up the Pomeranian and gone like, oh, no, Poppy.
No.
But they still,
I would have.
They still kept Pennywise's face on it because they're like, no, 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 we can't let the audience forget that Pennywise is the bad guy.
It
it's like,
for
it
me.
Has nothing to do with Pennywise. And the thing is, I get it.
You're comparing
so
it to the book, though. I'm like,
I know, I get it.
In terms of the movie,
they never sell that to me, that he's just Lovecraftian horror.
No, no, no. But the book doesn't either.
Yeah.
The book's like, the book doesn't sell Lovecraftian
horror. The book comes closer than the movie does.
The book's like, it's a big female spider with a bunch of eggs. It's like, it makes it too material.
I think it's better off left out of it.
Yeah.
I mean, it's the idea, it's not even a spider.
Female spider.
That's the only thing your human brain can comprehend.
We already
have one.
We got one redheaded.
Got the one girl.
It's perfect. No.
Does she ever talk about, like, a not it in this movie to anyone? Because it does not pass the Bechdel test, I'm just saying. Unless it is a one, in which case I guess it does.
Well, I like that they kept it, you know, more... I don't know, in this movie they didn't define it as much. Like, there wasn't the whole turtle thing. They kind of referenced...
You're never getting peyote turtle. Sorry, nerds, but you're never getting peyote turtle.
You're not going to get the turtle.
You already got a cocaine clown. You don't get peyote turtle.
Yeah. I like that.
All clowns are cocaine
clowns.
Keep
it more based on, like, this weird clown and why is it a clown. And, like, you get some brief moments of, like...
A little bit.
What it could have been. You know, it is some kind of alien thing. I would have just... kept that out. Just make it just weird. Like, well, we don't know what it is.
I love
that
we
have to kill it.
I love that it waited million years to learn what a clown was.
Yeah, right?
It's like, I guess I'm an owl now because Native Americans are scared of owls. Like, when he saw that clown and just like who happened to look like, you know, Bill Skarsgård, he's like, that's what I'm doing from now on.
I like the references to it's been here for a while and gone through many different forms. I didn't like the point where that somebody actually says it just waited for a million years. I'm like, why?
Yeah.
Because there was...
Define it. Don't even go, like just
it is
super vague.
Be clear,
you know?
That, like,
it waited until humans arrived.
Just clear enough to say, this is something we don't understand.
Yeah.
It's been here for a long time. You don't need to be ultra specific about
right.
it.
You
I mean, someone had said...
It fit on fear, and for a while, like, dinosaurs weren't really full of fear, other than, like, I don't want this thing
dinosaurs
to eat
kept
me.
Kicking its ass.
Yeah. It waited. It took humans to give it the meat that it desired.
Like, Pennywise is like, so, do you want a balloon? And then it's like, oh, clever girl.
Also, it would have been nice to just kind of define, like, that more otherworldliness to it, like, how it infects people.
Yeah.
Because it kind of infects, like, the bully. And in the book, it infects Bev's husband.
Yeah.
Who plays a really
and
big
her
role.
Father.
And her father.
Yeah.
And, like, it would have been nice to show, oh, well, Derry is not, it's not just Pennywise.
Yeah. It doesn't
it's
prey on just children.
People. And it's like a
it's the whole community.
Once again, would have been one of those things. I felt like the bully character needed a whole episode of exploration.
Yeah, they really shortchanged him.
Because he's just
him
a
here.
Mechanic.
Yeah.
To like add something to a few sequences here. There should have been a moment where a character goes, you're not real.
And he
is real.
And stabbing Eddie in the face should not be a laugh. It's like, you just got stabbed in the face. This should not be funny.
Yeah.
And they play it for a laugh. And that's where a lot of the horror of that moment where they're like,
it's just
your literal past, this bully who terrorized you as a child has now come back and he has literally stabbed you in the fucking face.
I identified with how they did those types of things, though. Why?
Yeah. Oh, because you got like
stabbed in the face
when you were a kid and then...
No, not because of that, although I did stab myself in the face as a child.
What?
But
I want to hear this story later.
What I identified with was, like, the anxiety of all these characters.
Sure.
Like, where when horrific things happen to you, and you have, like, this weird anxiety, you're like, ha 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 ha. And so, like, Eddie's character did it, Richie's character did it, where they, like, in these anxious moments, their reaction is to just... laugh or use humor. So I liked that.
I mean, it works for the kids stuff.
The way he, like, hid behind the curtain, that's funny to me.
Yeah. I mean, the kids stuff works great, but seeing it as adults, I'm like, you can't just laugh this off. You laughed it off as children, And that's how you survive. That's why you're not in a mental institute.
Hey, but he laughed it off and he survived as an adult too.
I feel like what I like when children, you know, they're running around acting like kids, I can get behind it. When it's a bunch of adults running around acting like kids, it's a little bit cringy at moments for me.
Let's do this little comedy bit about this dog. It surely can't be Beth. No, it must be Beth.
I thought it was great.
It's like it's funny, but it's like that is the moment where that would have been very funny at the halfway mark in the movie. It would be a great moment to provide some levity, to relieve some tension.
Just not at the climax.
But there hadn't been enough tension built up at that point.
I don't need my movies to be formulas anymore. I've seen enough MCU shit.
You're saying this movie wasn't formula?
Oh, I was on your side until just now.
Well, okay, it's a formula, right? But I'm with her. But weird stuff, like...
I like things that throw you off your game.
And exactly.
You go, that's a weird moment for this to happen. And there is a lot of interstitial humor moments in like inexplicable moments in this film.
But you also part of there is a two-story Pennywise that is literally attacking their friends at that
moment. Well,
they're
not in that room when that's happening. This scene is happening.
No, they ran out of that room purposefully to get away from
that
horror.
And then they're encountering a scene we saw in the first film.
Which is exactly,
And
it's
then
a callback.
They made the wrong decision. Question mark in the first one, so it is kind of funny them going fuck. We went.
He's fucking with us. No, he's not fucking with us.
I found that great. I love that whole sequence. I
love
Pomeranians
it,
are adorable. Yeah. Not as adorable as corgis, which are God's perfect dog. Just sad.
And then like four endings where it's like Stan. I felt it was so unjustified
the
that
Stan thing.
And like wrote a letter to
the
them.
Letter, yeah,
that didn't bug me.
Well, because in the book, and again,
cheesy.
I know you
it
can't
was
compare.
So cheesy.
It's cool.
In the book, it doesn't happen. Stanley kills himself.
Yeah,
we're in the spoiler section. So we can talk about it. He kills himself. It's an act of cowardice. He, and again, they downplay this in the first movie where Beverly sees the deadlights. It's actually originally Stanley who sees them. And it fucks his brain up forever. Mm-hmm. So the very thought of going back to Derry is more than he can bear. And he kills himself because he cannot handle it. To change that act of cowardice... Quite rightfully, too, by the way. It's like there's no real reason why any sane person would go back to that. To change it into an act of courage, I get why they're doing it,
but
it feels cheesy.
Yeah.
He's like, I did this for you guys. That's why I'm killing myself, because I'm a pussy and I wouldn't actually help you.
I am a coward.
I'm a coward, and I would hold you down,
it is an act of
cowardice. And I'm going to die. It's like, no,
and then,
it's
and
disrespectful
then
to the character.
Reading that shit and crying, like, get the fuck out of here. Like, you don't give a shit about that guy.
It's like, it's...
Bill, all of James McAvoy in this movie is just... It's not great. It's
his stutter is impeccable.
His stutter?
No, I like that.
It
I agree
good.
With it. I love
Maybe
it. It is a man who has cured his stutter, and for the first time in almost 30 years, he starts stuttering again.
Y'all are buying.
I love that.
And as the movie progresses, it gets worse and worse.
It's right in the book. It's like the guy
today, Junior.
Oh my god!
You know. And if you see how bad whatever the kid was in the first movie, how bad his stutter was.
But I was buying the kid's stutter in the first movie. And this I was like, James McAvoy. And, he
wasn't
being
Mr.
Tumnus, not being the proper
Professor X would never stutter. It's like, he's not playing that character.
Should've
I love
Samuel
the fact.
Samuel Jackson, because then we'd be like,
No, I did like that. The surprising thing about this is if you go back and read the book, and I know some people love him, I always thought Richie was annoying. He's supposed to be the comic relief in the book. He's not funny at all, but in the movie he is. In both movies he is. In the book he's not funny. Not at all.
Beep, Marco.
Fuck off, Richie. You know, he's like, here's another racist fucking impersonation I have in my arsenal. That was basically his shtick.
Maybe, like, Stephen King doesn't know how to be funny.
He was also writing it from the perspective of a kid in the 1950s.
Yeah.
Who, like, Black Sambo would have made all of your friends laugh. Today, it's like, not so much. But...
today and just get you banned off Facebook.
Exactly. I mean, if you go back and read the book, it's like, he's like, he does that step and fetch it fucking voice right in front of Mike, and everybody's like, oh, Richie's so funny. And I'm like, Mike's like, you white motherfucker, you're lucky I don't kill you right now. But they don't do that. What I do love the fact, though, is that they actually made him funny and a compelling character, and they changed the character of Richie. Mm-hmm. This whole, there's a new subplot added to Richie, a new secret added to Richie, and a new secret added to Bill, which I actually appreciated.
Because what was it with Bill?
Bill was like, you know, he's like, yeah, the guilt was, there was always the guilt there that,
it wasn't,
you know,
as much.
He couldn't save his brother, but now in the new movie, he's like, I lied. I didn't want to go out with you. It was raining. You're my little brother. I didn't feel like playing with you.
Yeah.
That's not in the book, to my knowledge. That was a great addition where for years he's realized, you know, he's kind of buried that part of himself. It's like, I could have gone with my little brother, but he's my annoying little brother. I don't want to go hang out with him. Go. Here's your paper boat. Go fucking play by yourself. I'm going to just, you know, do whatever 13-year-olds do by themselves.
We know what that is.
Yeah, we know what that is. But, you know, here's a paper boat, kid. Leave me alone.
Were you like the bleachers
too, Bill? Yeah, you know. But my point is, I like that addition. I thought that was really smart. It's like, because it's never really made clear why Bill, other than the fact that your little brother dies, it's never really made clear why Bill feels so bad about it. But here it gives him some stakes. It gives him a reason to feel guilty.
Oh, and one last thing I want to address before we finish up is that, and much has been already, of course, because we are in, like, shock culture at this point of, like, is it appropriate or not that there's a gay killing in the beginning of this film? Now, to be clear, it's, like,
right out of the book.
They celebrate.
It's out of the book.
They love it.
It's out of the book. Exactly.
Played by Xavier Dolan, the filmmaker.
Yeah, exactly. Gay filmmaker. Yeah. It was based on a actual killing, correct, almost exactly, that happened around that area at the time that was very shocking when Stephen King wrote the book, that he was trying to call out as saying, like, about the internal, like, in a David Lynchy sort of way, that evil that lays underneath every single town. It was a metaphor for, like, Pennywise in and of itself.
Right.
In the movie, it feels a little awkward.
It feels detached, because maybe that scene was, like, completely shot after the fact or before.
It feels like a different movie.
None of those people show up again.
It's just, like Pennywise goes after children, so why did that happen?
Because he doesn't go after this guy. If you look, again, in the book, every 27 years, it's not just kids.
It's the infection.
It's like, you see, like, in the book, you see and I miss the black spot. I wish they had shown the black spot in the movies, which is where Mike's grandfather in the book, you know, it was basically an all-black club, and essentially the Ku Klux Klan come and burn it down and kill a lot of people. Likewise, you see a mural in an alleyway celebrating, like, this event that happened where it's basically like a Bonnie and Clyde type situation, except the entire town of Derry
just
came out and just murdered the fuck out of these people.
That scene is amazing.
And, you know, everyone's like later on going like, yeah, the weird thing is I remember this clown being around, and it's not enough that Pennywise kills little kids. He likes to do that, but he also brings out the worst in others.
Yeah.
And he loves being around wherever there's violence and mayhem and murder. And in the book, that signals his return. He kind of, just by his very presence, inspires this hate crime. Yeah. And he gets off on this shit. That's when, you know, Mike realizes, like, fuck, this guy's back. Bad shit is starting to happen in this town again.
Let me say, I have no problem with any of that, except there is a so subtextual, it's barely acknowledged that Richie is gay subplot going on.
Yeah.
That like, you're like, if you're going to start that way, that feels like that should have been more important and prominent in the storyline.
It should have been more prominent in the first film.
Should have tied
it's
into
it. It's brand subtext. New.
Yeah.
It's
a totally new addition.
You want it to pay off, and then when you don't see it at the end, You're expecting it. Like, you're watching Bill Hader the whole time, and you're like,
it's barely,
when is it
going
to come out? Like, I mean, when is he going to admit it to
even when
friends?
Pennywise is confronting him directly towards the end, going, you have this secret, this dark secret. Yeah. And it's never spoken after.
Yeah.
You know, like,
it's weird.
We know what it is, But, like, it felt like with that beginning that there should have been some sort of sense of, like, right. like but, that tying back
but in. But maybe in this purposeful, like, he wanted to do it this way, and it just leaves me scratching my head. Why?
Yeah. Maybe in the director's cut, we'll see that, you know? Yeah,
supposedly, there's going to be a considerably longer director's cut.
Yeah. But, well, he's... Muschietti has talked about having director's cut for both films, and he's also talked about potentially... taking both films and like what Coppola did back in the late 70s, early 80s, where he cut The Godfather parts 1 and 2 together.
Yeah.
You know, it's been done before. It's not the first time it's ever happened. Tarantino did it with, you know, Hateful Eight on Netflix.
I mean, like, I'm still waiting for a place I can watch the Kill Bill big combined one.
Well, I mean, he
said...
Is that
available anywhere? No. I know it exists.
He said it's not going to happen for Kill Bill because
Kill Bill was screened in Japan.
Well, okay.
Yeah.
But again, there's like no additional
I know someone who saw it.
Either way, regardless.
It's not an urban legend.
Muschietti might potentially do that. I don't know. Maybe if the movie makes a shitload of money this weekend, they might
do it. It's,
but
I don't think
it's going to happen.
I think it very well might.
It's going to be a lot of money.
Everyone on my Facebook is talking about it. That being said, we do kind of live in a bubble.
The thing is,
we went to a theater and there was like 20 people in it. What,
it's 7:30 on a fucking Friday night.
I was in the galaxy.
I was like with 20 people. It was weird.
Yeah, there were more people working the theater than there were patrons.
Oh, that's not good.
Yeah,
it's
and I was like, it was weird. Is this the...
There's a reason why they didn't put it out for the press screening.
Cinemas?
I just want them to take the message from that, like, make the goddamn miniseries if you're going to try and adapt something this big again.
Yeah.
Like, I get it. You hope for more receipts from a movie thing, but tell the story right. Do it on television.
I will say the only reason I was there is because it was all the good seats were taken at
the Alamo.
At the Alamo Draft House. So that's why I went.
That's why I went to see it.
General Cattle.
Why I went to go see it at noon today.
Yeah.
Because there's like 9 people there, and they're like, yeah, I don't work either.